Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
And now we've been doing a lot with JFK, and of course we cover a lot with the CIA. We just had a spy on the last episode, everybody knows. So today we've got really lucky, and we've got Jefferson Morley. So, Jeff, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jeff, boy, you've been in the news, of course, and books. I've been through two of them, Our Man in Mexico and the CIA, Secret Assassination Files, JFK. Wow. And, of course, you've got the website. So you've got lots to do with JFK and CIA. And let's talk, first of all, about the lawsuit with Morley v. CIA and what's been going on there.
So just for the background of your viewers, Morley v. CIA is a lawsuit seeking certain JFK assassination files by a deceased mid-level CIA officer named George Ioannidis. And I launched this litigation in 2003 because I thought Ioannidis was an interesting witness to the assassination story. He was a CIA officer who served in Miami and New Orleans in 1963 and was thus in a position to know about events leading up to the assassination, including the events involving Lee Harvey Oswald. So the CIA stonewalled this request, and I appealed and won a batch of documents, which revealed a great deal more about Ioannidis' activities at that time. So the question before the CIA this year was whether the agency would pay my court costs for this litigation. Now, usually in litigation like this, if the plaintiff wins on appeal, the government has to pay your expenses. It's just kind of a basic fairness thing. And also it's good public policy. The government can't capriciously reject people's requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, otherwise they're going to pay. So I had substantially prevailed, but the CIA refused to pay my court costs. Mm-hmm. That was the issue before the court this week. And on Monday, we received a ruling. So you've got a little bit of news here. And by a 2-1 margin, the D.C. Court of Appeals rejected my request for court costs and sided with the CIA. And one of the judges who voted in the majority on that decision was Judge Brett Kavanaugh. The decision was filed in D.C. federal court at about 4:20 in the afternoon. By 9 o'clock that night, of course, President Trump was introducing Brett Kavanaugh as his nominee to be the next Supreme Court justice. So we have a decision, the latest decision in the case, in which Kavanaugh sided with the CIA against me. So that's the state of that case right now. An important part of the story is that one of the judges, it was a 2-1 decision, and one of the judges, Judge Karen Henderson, came out strongly in my favor and was quite critical of Kavanaugh's decision, and said that I clearly deserved court fees and that my request was not trivial or minimal, as the government said, but was in fact important. So I had some support, very strong support, from Judge Karen Henderson, who is also on the D.C. Court of Appeals. So that's the state of the lawsuit right now. And, you know, I feel that the government's position is not tenable, as this dissent shows. So I plan to appeal this latest decision because it's unfortunate. And the case will go on.
Right. What's this do? And what is this? How does this make you feel about Kavanaugh and him going to the Supreme Court, favoring the CIA? Is this a good move or is this bad?
I think it's bad. I mean, I was saying that this information was in the public interest, that it benefited the public, which it clearly did. There's been a lot of media interest in this case. The New York Times has written about it. The Associated Press, James Rosen on Fox News covered this story. The Boston Globe, you know, there's a lot of attention paid to this lawsuit. And for the court to just come out and say, oh, well, there was no benefit to that. I mean, to me, Kavanaugh was bending over backwards to side with the government. And, you know, you look to the courts to be an independent force and not to be automatically aligned with government agencies. And to me, he went out of his way to align himself with the CIA and, you know, disparage what, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but to disparage a good faith effort to find out more information about a very important event, the assassination of the president. You know, like I say, I think Judge Kavanaugh was bending over backwards on behalf of the CIA, and that's, you know, unfortunate. I look at his record now, and I see how he's ruled in other Freedom of Information Act cases, and, you know, he defers to the national security agencies. He defers to them over the public. So that's part of his record. And now his decision in my case is also part of his record.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, you know, it's kind of confusing how the government decides what they're going to keep classified and what they're able to release if somebody asks for it. But now that you have won this, do you think that it's going to open up more floodgates and more as information is going to be released now that you've won this?
Well, no, I did not win this case. Judge Kavanaugh ruled for the majority, and which said that there was no benefit to what I did, and that my court costs won't be covered. So it's quite the opposite. This sends a message to people who are trying to get information out of the government that even if you get something significant over the government's objections, the government's still not going to, you know, the government's not going to compensate you. So the government can get away with bad decisions is basically the legacy of what Kavanaugh is saying. It's like, you know.
I misunderstood. I thought you had won in appeals.
No. I mean, Judge Henderson was very strongly in my favor, but she was the one against the two, Judge Kavanaugh and Judge Katsas. Judge Gregory Katsas were the majority. So I lost, and I think that, you know, we have a snapshot here of Kavanaugh's, you know, style of jurisprudence in the national security area. You know, he to me, he gives the benefit of the doubt. He bends over backwards for the CIA. He certainly did that in this case.
You know, I was going to say, what seems to be the issue with them holding back so much information? I mean, October of 17, they were supposed to release all the files that a lot of them didn't get released.
Yes.
What's the deal? Like, what are they hiding?
You know, that's a great question, because, you know, the fact is that Congress passed this law 25 years ago and said, you know, within 25 years, let's just make everything public, right? It was a very strong, full disclosure law. So the 25th anniversary of that law comes around last October, and everybody's paying attention, like, wow, is, you know, there's a lot of material still secret. What are we going to get? And what we got was more cover-up. And so the CIA went to Trump, and they said, we can't possibly release all this. Give us 6 more months. So Trump gave them 6 months. So in April of this year, the CIA released a bunch of, and other government agencies, CIA and FBI primarily, and they released a lot of material, 20, 30,000 pages. But, and this is a big but, they kept another 15,000 pages of material secret. Now, the intent of Congress was quite clear. Like, let's just get everything out there.
Right.
And the CIA and FBI are still coming around after 25 years and saying, oh, no, we got to keep this stuff secret, and we got to keep that stuff secret. So that was very disappointing. Trump agreed to that. I don't know why. I think, you know, he's got other things on his mind. Right. But anyway, he didn't stick up for the public interest. And, you know, so the context of this is people have tried all reasonable means to get this information public. Congress passed a law and passed it unanimously. You know, the media pays attention, and still the CIA and the secret agencies have the ability to keep this stuff out of the public record. So that's very discouraging, and that's the context of Kavanaugh's decision. What are they hiding? You know, this is a game where the government wants you to get into it and say, oh, you know, they're hiding evidence of a conspiracy to kill JFK. And then the government will turn around and point at you and say, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're nuts, get out of here. Well, I don't play that game. What they're hiding is what they're hiding. They are very clear that they want to hide a great deal of material about JFK's assassination. And it seems from this ruling that Brett Kavanaugh is okay with that. So that's kind of your question sets the context for his decision. And, you know, we just see there's no will in the judiciary to make the government obey the law. There's no will in Washington to make the government obey the law around JFK assassination files. That's my, you know, that's what I take away from all of this.
Wow. I just have to wonder where it's going. Like, how many times can they get away with this? How many times can they keep putting it off?
Well, the agreement with Trump was that the whole thing has to be now resolved by 2021. So, you know, but what I think is, you know, the CIA rolled, to me, the CIA rolled Trump in October. They rolled him again in, you know, in April. And in 2021, whoever is president, they're going to believe, not without reason, that they can roll that person too and keep these records secret forever. You know, so, I mean, I don't know what other conclusion to reach. I don't want to reach that, but, you know, it's like, it's very clear the path that they've set out.
And they're kind of just confirming people's beliefs that they're hiding something if they just keep kicking this can down the road. You know, I mean, so far they've been able to convince a large portion of the public, there's nothing to see here. You know, go back to the Warren Commission and, you know, just don't worry about this. Okay, yeah. I'll go back to sleep. But now if they keep, you know, no, you can't see this, you can't see this. They're just confirming people's beliefs.
Yes. Now, let me just say one thing. I don't want to speak on behalf of the CIA, but, you know, they are a secretive institution. It's their job to keep secrets. So they sort of keep secrets reflexively. And I understand that, and I understand that in their profession, they have to do that. But what I don't understand is when the public interest is so clear, you know, people just want to know. Just put it out there. You know, it's not a big deal that, you know, that their behavior can, like you say, it confirms the suspicion. Why wouldn't you think that they were concealing something significant? I mean, they are hiding things, lots of things. So let me just say one thing about that, though, why they hide lots of things. Because now there's 15,000 different documents that remain classified in some way. They might have a word missing or, you know, redacted, or a paragraph, or the identity of a person, or they might be blacked out you know, the whole page. We've seen that too in these cases. You know, there might be some justification for that, you know, somewhere, but in general, it's like there is no justification for it. But what we have to do as JFK researchers is now we have to go through 15,000 documents, you know, and that's like, that's not simple. That takes a long time. And so what they do is, I think that, you know, 14,900 of those documents are completely unimportant.
Yeah.
And 100 of them might be important. And so by keeping 15,000 secret, it makes it much harder to find the 100 that are important. And that, I think, is what is going on. They're building a haystack so that they can stick the needle in it.
Now that's strange. You know, I think the CIA is there to protect Americans. And this is something that's 50 years old. What is it they're protecting Americans from? That's what's confusing to me. Because it's 50 years ago. I mean,
let me offer some speculation on that. And this is the subject of my next book, and I hope to, you know, be able to present it in a more precise and completely corroborated form. But, you know, what are they scared of? I think the story from 1963 that was never disclosed to the Warren Commission and was not uncovered by the various other investigations was that there were authorized CIA operations involving Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin, in the summer of 1963. So CIA officers were running an operation involving Oswald at the time that Oswald, the president, was killed and Oswald was arrested for the crime. And I think that what they are hiding is the existence of those operations. Now, those operations could have been connected to a conspiracy to kill the president, where they could have had nothing to do with the fact that the president was killed. We don't know that, but I think that is what they are hiding. And so you say, oh, well, you know, who cares about that? But if you're inside the CIA and you're looking at a secret like that, you know, if that came out, that could affect your budget next year. That's not some random minor issue. You know, if something big about the CIA and JFK came out, the agency could take a hell of a hit. You know, and they did in the 1970s, you know, when the public got fed up with CIA spying on Americans and that sort of thing in the 1970s, you know, the agency's budget was cut. The people were laid off. The agency was curbed. It had to do, you know, new things to abide by the law. And so, you know, that's what there is a real downside today to full JFK disclosure. It's remarkable to realize that, but I believe that's true. And I think that this court decision absolutely confirms that. The CIA does not want to talk about this today.
Yeah.
Now that's the impact on them, but what do you think the impact on society would be if they did release those documents?
Well, you know, the documents might be inconclusive. People are going to think what they think about JFK regardless. Or they could have something that decisively changes our mind. You know, I don't make up my mind about the evidence before I've seen it. To me, it could go either way. But that's the point of, you know, transparency is put it out there and that shows the government's acting in good faith. That would be the most important thing to demonstrate in all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, to me it almost seems like it's something that they still do today. And by us learning what they did back then and how they do it and who's involved, I think has to affect somebody and what they're doing today.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's right. They are protecting, quote, sources and methods, unquote. And the sources and methods of 1963 are also the sources and methods of 2018. And the CIA has as much in court documents related to my case.
I was going to say, like in your secret assassination files of JFK, book, mm-hmm. there were items that you specifically thought and listed that it's still unknown, things that people we need to know, and this we're going to find out in the release. What subjects do you think we still don't know and they're still not releasing to us?
Well, first, just let me say a couple things. There's CIA and JFK is a Kindle ebook, easily available on Amazon for a low price. And it recapitulates some of the journalism that I've done over the years about CIA in the JFK story. So that's what CIA and JFK is all about. And I think what the book shows is that this question of Cuba operations in 1963, psychological warfare operations in 1963, psychological warfare operations against the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, the leftist group that supported Fidel Castro. These are the most sensitive issues when it comes to JFK records, still to this day. So I think that operations in this area involving Lee Harvey Oswald is probably the thing that really they're seeking to hide the most. I could be wrong. They could be hiding other things as well. That's what we have to see. So that's where I think there's more to be learned. And in my lawsuit, I sought more information about George Joannides, who was a CIA officer who was in a position to know about these sorts of operations. He was in Miami. He was in New Orleans. He was working with Cubans who knew Oswald. So, all the secrecy around him revealed by my lawsuit further encourages me to think and to believe that's what they're trying the hardest to conceal. So it's somewhere in there. Now, in that book, some of the things that I identified have come out, although, still in redacted form. So we have learned more about the story, but there's still a lot of stuff, a lot of material that is secret.
You know, one thing I find interesting is why Trump would go along with the CIA when he's got such a opposition to them and everything they do publicly.
Yeah, it's a contentious relationship.
Yeah, so when he has that, and almost a lot of supporters of his are conspiratorial. So in a way, wouldn't it have been better for him to force their hand and just have them expose it?
Yeah, I think politically, in the big picture public politics, I mean, that's why I was hopeful. I'm not a fan of the president, but he is a wild card and he is independent of these agencies. And I hope that he would act that way. He didn't. And I think the reason why is because, when the door closes and the cameras are off,
right.
Trump has to make some hard decisions. And when your national security people are coming to you and saying, we cannot possibly release this stuff, he doesn't need to pick a fight with the CIA. I mean, the president has a lot of enemies in Washington, and he needs friends. He can't afford to have enemies in the CIA. And so I think his calculation was, I'm going to go along on this one because, I don't want to fight with these people. And I also think the CIA went to him and said, this is really, really important to us. Do not mess with us on this one. We have to have your concession. And I think when they said that, when your national security people say to you, we've got to have this, most presidents cave because, you're the guy in charge and you don't want somebody to say, oh, you went against your national security apparatus, the people who are keeping everybody safe. So I think Trump caved.
Yeah, it's sort of surprising is all for me. I think I didn't expect him to. A lot of your writings deal with CIA, and a lot of what you're doing, Our Man in Mexico and all this stuff. What drew you into writing so much about the CIA?
So I came to Washington as a young reporter in the 1980s. And, you know, I was just wanted to do journalism in Washington. And the big story in the 1980s were the civil wars in Central America. You had a leftist government take power in Nicaragua. You had a very strong leftist movement fighting for power in El Salvador and Guatemala. And when President Reagan was elected, he said, you know, we're going to put these rebellions down. We're not going to negotiate. We're going to crush them. And so the politics in the United States in the 1980s, from 1982 to 1986, certainly, were really dominated by the question of, was the U.S. going to intervene in Central America? Should the U.S. intervene? And how should the U.S. intervene? And while that was going on, the CIA was deeply involved in Reagan administration policy. So if you wanted to understand the big political story of the day, Nicaragua and El Salvador, you had to know something about the CIA. And so I got into that right away and started reporting. And, you know, I broke some, you know, big stories. I found out about what was going on behind the scenes. So that was the origin of my interest. JFK came later. I became interested in that. And I realized as I was doing this work that, you know, I was coming to the scene 30 years after the fact, right? I was in kindergarten when Kennedy was killed. I'm going to date myself there. So, you know, I what did I know? So I always thought from a journalistic point of view, I mean, I could study the record and come up with a theory, and I've done that and changed my theory many times. But you know what? Who cares about Morley's theory? You know, I mean, ultimately, you know, if I came up with some theory, who would care? What I thought would be more interesting would be to go back and find CIA people at the time and try and understand what did the crime look like in their eyes. And so that was really kind of one of the motivating things for my first book, Our Man in Mexico, Winston Scott and the Hidden.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
History of the CIA. And this book, also available on Amazon, is a very... It's a biography of a spy. Wynn Scott was the CIA's top man in Mexico in 1963. He had a front row seat on the Kennedy assassination. He wrote a memoir late in life in which he talked about his impressions of the JFK case. And so that, I thought, would be interesting. Nobody cares what Morley thinks, but here was a guy who was on the inside. What did he think? And so Our Man in Mexico is an attempt to tell his story and to portray the assassination of a president as it appeared to a super competent, super loyal CIA insider. And that's, you know, the book is really, I think, valuable in that regard, because you see clearly what he thought. And what Win Scott thought was something had gone very wrong in Dallas, and the president had been killed by his enemies. Scott wasn't sure who, but he was sure that that was the case. And he wrote that before he died. So that's where I, you know, that's where I come in, is trying to understand, what did this crime look like in the eyes of the CIA? And that's, you know, as the lawsuit shows, it's still a very sensitive question.
Now, over the years, have you interviewed people from other agencies like NSA, FBI, and what were their opinions and their views different from CIA?
I have interviewed widely. I mean, most of the people, most of the sort of the agents, you know, are dead. In fact, I think it's safe to say all of them are. But, you know, studied the testimony in various investigations. And, you know, I mean, when you look at the big picture of the JFK investigation, this was a politically controlled investigation right from the start. And the latest releases in 2017 confirmed that. One of the memos that came out, which we only had before in partial form, and now we have the complete document, is written, you know, the day after Kennedy is killed. A suspect, Lee Harvey Oswald, has been arrested and denied involvement in the crime. And J. Edgar Hoover writes a memo for the Record and says, we have to convince the public that Oswald is the real assassin and had no accomplices. So that was the order from on high, from the moment the crime was committed. So the investigation had not even begun, and J. Edgar Hoover was dictating the conclusion. And 9 months later, that is the conclusion that the Warren Commission reached, that Oswald right. was the real assassin. Nobody else was involved. Unfortunately, a little man shot a big man. It's too bad. We're very sorry. Now let's move on. Now, you know, that was the story. And it was like, it was not convincing, you know, it didn't convince people.
Well, were those his literal words, though? Because you said a word in there that's very key, that we have to convince the public that he's the real assassin, which tells me that there may have been other options at the time.
Absolutely. No, and that is a direct quote, that Oswald is the real assassin. And it's a very revealing use of words, because that is clearly what he was thinking. And so the investigation has not begun, and he is ruling out the possibility that anybody else is involved. That's, by its very nature, suspicious. And so, you know, now fast forward 50 years later, you know, we're asked to stand by this very suspicious conclusion that was reached before the investigation began. It's just, you know, most people can't accept that.
No, not at all. Hey, yo.
Now, what's it like investigating when you're asking questions and when you're prying and pushing buttons and dealing with CIA and dealing with people that this is what they do for a living? What's the reactions to your investigating?
Well, how did you earn their trust first?
Well, one of the arts of being a newspaper reporter, which I've been my whole adult life, is that you... you know how to put people at ease and get them to talk to you. And so when I talk to retired CIA people about these events, or people, you know, people who were agents of the CIA, not employees, you know, if you're not, I'm not a prosecutor. I'm not looking to put them away. And I'm not prosecuting any conspiracy theory of the Kennedy assassination. So when I talk to these people, I say, here's a document, you know, what was going on back then, you know, tell me about it. And so if you're not like prosecuting a case against somebody and you're talking about something that was important in their life, and this story is important to many people in their lives, I find that people will open up and talk to you. Now, in my dealings with the CIA in court, they are quite hostile. Mm-hmm. And a few personal meetings that we had in person, you know, these people would give you the dead fish handshake,
They would give you the beady eye. They were quite visibly and personally hostile when they were in my presence. So, but you know, that's fine. That happens when you're a reporter. You know, I take it as a badge that, you know, I was onto something important if they were worried that worried about it. So, so, you know, it's hard sometimes. It's, you know, it's taken many years, so you have to be patient. I have a lot of supporters at the JFK Facts website, jfkfacts.org. You know, we get a couple thousand people a day there. They seem to support what I'm doing, and, you know, that kind of personal encouragement that people care about this and want to see it through, that helps me go. So, you know, it's a varied experience. It's not easy to do, but here's the thing, you know, nobody ever came to me and said, "Jeff, you're way off base. There's nothing to this," or, you know, "that's a crazy theory." I mean, it's not a crazy theory because I don't have a theory. It's all facts. And nobody's ever said, "Well, that's BS, Jeff, or you're wrong, or get lost, or you're misinterpreting it." No, nobody's ever said that. Everybody looks at the story and says, "Wow, that's interesting. What's the explanation?" And so I go to the government and I say, "Well, what's the explanation?" And you get totally stonewalled. So, what, you know, that's where we're at right now. You know, we've made some headway in understanding the story about the CIA in 1963. I understand the CIA doesn't want to talk about that in 2018. But, you know, I believe in the system, and I think someday, you know, they will have to talk about it. So that's all we can do.
Out of all the theories and the books and the people that have written about this assassination, you know, from Roger Stone to Max Holland to you name it,
Who
do you feel is the closest, or who's done the best research for you?
In terms of the JFK books that are out there, a book that made a big impression on me early on, when I first realized around the time of Oliver Stone's movie,
right.
You know, I knew about the assassination and I reported a lot on the CIA, but I wasn't an expert by any means in the subject. So I went back to try and read the books on the subject, and I started with the first books that were written so that I could understand how the story unfolded. And there was a book written in 1967 by a woman named Sylvia Marr called Accessories After the Fact, which was a very careful dissection of the Warren Commission. There was no theory in it. It simply argued that the Warren Commission's conclusions did not follow from their evidence. So that was a very careful early book that I liked. Then around 1980, there was another book that I found that was very good in a very different way. Anthony Summers, a British journalist, did a book called Not in Your Lifetime. And Summers did a lot of original reporting, and that book opened my eyes up. He did a lot of original reporting in 1978, 79, 80. And I realized, you know, the National Press Corps in the United States simply had not done the obvious, you know, shoe leather reporting about, you know, witnesses to the assassination. And I realized, you know, how much journalists in 1964 had totally deferred to the government and said, "Oh, the Warren Commission said this, therefore it has to be true." Summers came along and interviewed a lot of people and showed there was many, many reasons to think that it wasn't. So that was a very important book to me. A third book that was really very important is called Oswald and the CIA by my friend John Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And John was in Army intelligence for 20 years. He's a Chinese speaker and was stationed in Japan and did a lot of signals intelligence work with Chinese military. Very high level intelligence work. A super grounded guy, no political axe to grind. He's very kind of, I would say, centrist in his political views. But with a military man, with the precision, kind of the precise mind of a military man, And he's got a PhD in history, and he's a good historian himself. And his book, Oswald and the CIA, I think was really revelatory for me because it showed just how much the CIA knew about Oswald before the assassination. And so that's a line of investigation that I have pursued since then. And my books, Our Man in Mexico and The Ghost, which is my new biography of James Angleton, another CIA officer, have pursued this and showed just how much the government knew about Oswald before the assassination of Kennedy. And that's important because it shows that, you know, the fundamental statement of the Warren Commission, that this disturbed man came out of nowhere and shot the president for no apparent reason, that's the official story. Well, he didn't come out of nowhere. Okay, let's leave aside what happened in Dealey Plaza. He was well known to a dozen top CIA officers in the fall of 1963 when JFK was still alive. So that fact alone, to me, tells us the Warren Commission is not an adequate description of the crime, period. And it has nothing to do with who fired a gun in Dealey Plaza. Okay, it's not. The fact that Oswald was well known to the upper echelon of the CIA has to be incorporated into the official understanding, the popular understanding of how the president was killed. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's the facts of the matter now. And I think that what we're going to see is that reality is sinking in. And I think it's even sinking in at the CIA. They are going to have to come clean at some point about this. The problem that we have is, you know, federal judges like Brett Kavanaugh are protective of the CIA's interests, and so it's very hard to get at all the information.
How do you think this affects us now, today? Do we have to worry about the president being assassinated in the same way, in the same types of, I don't know, how do you say, cover-ups, or the same type of operations working behind the scenes to keep it from the public?
You know, I think it's a mistake to get that literal.
Right.
You know, I mean, we live in a different time. People contend for power in a very different way. So, you know, I think I hesitate to jump to that conclusion. That feels a little paranoid to me. I mean, yes, you know, we should. Sometimes we need to err, you know, on the side of being overly suspicious. But I don't like to, you know, make that a habit. So I don't think the problem is literally that, you know, we face a danger of assassination. I think the problem is that we need a system that is transparent and that these secret agencies can be held accountable, you know, and that's what we don't have now, is the secret agencies are very powerful. And so, you know, and how do we know that they're obeying the law? How do we know that they're not spying on us? How do we know that they're not assassinating someone? You know, it's very hard for us to know. So I think that the reason why the JFK story still resonates is because people feel that, you know, there is this side, the secret side of government still has the ability to prevail against, you know, the public good somehow. And those fears take a lot of different forms, and there's a lot of different politics around that. But I think the importance of this story is that it really undermines confidence in this, that we can have, that our democracy can hold secret government agencies accountable. You know, and so I think it has a corrosive effect. I think that's the worst part of it. You know, what's going on behind the scenes? I mean, you know, that's a tough call. We can be sure something is, but we don't know what it is.
Well, here recently, we've kind of gotten a glimpse behind the curtain with this recent scandal with the FBI agents texting each other, you know, saying things such as, you know, he can't be the president, we're going to stop him, which implies that they may have some kind of a plan, or that they at least think that they can coalesce enough to perhaps try it again, you know, maybe just short of assassination.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the FBI's investigation of President Trump's campaign was completely proper and justified under law enforcement reasons that were available to the FBI. I think the notion that the FBI was a cockpit of support for Hillary Clinton is absurd. I know lots of FBI agents. In general, they're very conservative. So I don't buy that conspiracy theory. But the fact of the matter is that in this secret system, there is potential for abuse, and people are going to sometimes suspect it. And we need a system that is transparent enough that we can resolve that to people's satisfaction, and that the system, the power of these secret agencies was not abused. So that's the power of the secrecy system is what undermines everybody's confidence.
On your latest book, The Ghost, The Secret Life of CIA Spymaster James Jesus Angleton, how do you go about picking who you're going to write about? How do you decide which person in the CIA or in this sort of business you're going to follow through on?
Well, after writing the first book about Wynn Scott, Wynn Scott was, in the Office of Strategic Services during World War II. The OSS was the precursor to the CIA. It was America's first foreign intelligence agency. And so Wynn Scott was present at the creation of the CIA in 1947, and he served with distinction for the next 25 years. So in following his career in, intimate, almost daily detail, I came to know the history of the CIA in that period, and I was quite fascinated, and it was a very important story. The CIA went from not existing in 1947 to being, a worldwide power with immense powers for violence, propaganda, subversion all over the world. It's an astonishing story, really, if you think about it. So Wynn Scott was one of the important people in there. And so when I settled on James Angleton for my second CIA book, it was for the same reason. He was an important personality in this formative moment in the U.S. intelligence community. Wynn Scott was very powerful in Mexico. He was out in the field. Angleton was more the headquarters type. He was very powerful at CIA headquarters in Washington and then in Langley. So their careers illustrate different aspects of the CIA's story. But I was trying to capture the CIA in this formative period because the system that was created in those years is, to a remarkable extent, the system under which the CIA still operates today. Certainly the internal organization of the CIA has not changed that much. So that's where my interest comes. I'm also interested in, people who are just interesting characters. And Wynn Scott was a charismatic guy. He thought himself a poet. He was married three times. He was a complex, interesting man, even if, I didn't always like what he was doing. Extremely bright. James Angleton was very fascinating in a different way, a very intellectually charismatic man, forceful, brilliant, erudite, but also strange, paranoid, isolated. And so he was another CIA man whose personality I just thought was interesting to write about. A lot of times spying can be a very bureaucratic profession, and the people who rise to the top of the CIA are sometimes quite boring just because they're bureaucrats. These were interesting men. And so those books, I was looking both to tell a story about how the CIA came to be, and also, just a good story about, who were these men who made the world we live in.
So is it portrayed properly by Hollywood, as in like James Bond and stuff like that? Do these spies live that kind of wild life?
Jason Bourne.
No. Bond and Bourne are they're a complete illusion. Like I said, spying's a bureaucratic business. You have to write down, keep a lot of records, sit around and wait and do nothing for, long periods of time. So it's almost the opposite of that swashbuckling lifestyle that's portrayed in Hollywood. You know, but the depiction of the life of a CIA officer on, you know, on the series Homeland, on the other hand, you know, obviously dramatized and hyped, but conveys some more of the realities, much more, conforms much more to the world and the lives that those people actually pursue.
Well, thanks for ruining that for me, Jeff.
So Laura Croft isn't real? Oh, no. Oh. Have you ever felt threatened or been scared about some sort of event that happened with you when you were working or searching out the CIA?
You know, no. I mean, I've a couple of times when I've been out in the field doing interviews, I wonder, you know, and I take some basic precautions. But no, I don't think that my work threatens anyone. And maybe that's just naivete on my point of view. But so no, I felt afraid or taken much greater precautions in other reporting assignments that I've had. So no, I mean, I will say that one time I called up the CIA and asked them for comment on the story I was doing, and the guy said, "Oh, Mr. Morley, this is quite a big file." Yeah. I realized he was like flipping through the file of all the times I had called them, you know, so I'm sure my file is quite fat and, you know, they don't like me and say awful things about me behind my back. But, you know, in terms of being scared, no.
They're listening right now. I mean, that's.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, this is the other thing is, you know, like JFK, the JFK story has driven lots of people crazy. I mean, clinically crazy. It is a crazy inducing subject. And the way the government has responded to it will make you even crazier. So I really try hard to like fence out the crazy and just say, you know, I'm not going to deal with it or I'm not going to think about it. And so, you know, part of that thing about being paranoid, no, I'm really going to choose not to be paranoid. And if that's naive, I'd rather live naive than live paranoid, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Makes for a better life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now, if you want to give out your website, that would be great. We also have all of your books linked up on our website as well.
So let me just say, so if you're interested in the JFK subject, I blog regularly at jfkfacts.org, you know, welcome email from people. People send, we've gotten some fabulous original material from people just sending me things out of the blue. A video interview with the widow of Bill Harvey, who was another one of these big CIA men in the early days, like Wynne Scott and James Angleton. A very interesting interview, which is up on the site. There's original information. And, you know, we're not pushing any conspiracy theory. We welcome all points of view. We're just interested in the subject and talking about it in a sane and realistic way. And my books kind of follow that same dictum. I'm not pushing any conspiracy theory. I'm trying to depict what the CIA was like in the early days. Our Man in Mexico talks about how the CIA exercised its influence in, you know, revolutionary Mexico in the 1960s, a very tumultuous and interesting time. The Ghost is the biography of James Angleton, a very intelligent, strange, compelling top CIA official in the 60s and 70s, very involved in the JFK story, involved in the surveillance of Oswald, but also in the surveillance of the anti-war movement and the Watergate affair. So somebody who's was involved in many different things in the government. And the book you alluded to also, CIA and JFK, which is not a hardcover book, but a Kindle ebook, which collects my journalism about this subject. So those are all available on Amazon. And if people are interested in what I'm talking about here, that's the way to understand more, because there's a lot more to the story. And in those books, I really tell it in a way that is accessible and yet informative.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Our guest has been Jefferson Morley. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.